highly learned person who has absolutely no affinity for the bodily conception of life be affected by the bodily conception in regard to house, children, wealth, and similar other bodily productions. Purport. The Vedic ritualistic ceremonies are certainly meant to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. However, by such activities one does not factually satisfy the Lord. Rather, with the sanction of the Lord, one tries to satisfy one's own senses. In other words, materialists who are especially interested in sense gratification are given permission or license to enjoy sense gratification by executing the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. That is called Trigunya Vishaya Vedaha. The Vedic performances are based on the three modes of material nature. Those who are elevated above the material condition are not at all interested in such Vedic performances. Rather, they are interested in the higher duties of transcendental loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such devotional service is called Nistraigunya. Devotional service to the Lord has nothing to do with the material conception of bodily comfort. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Nilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Namasreshtam Manamapi Shachiputram Atra Swarupam Rupam Tasyagajam Urupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radhakundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kritaya Sri Gurum Tam Natosmi Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yatah Parakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavam Cha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Cha Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Lord Vishnu is mildly, almost indirectly, telling Prithu Maharaj that Prithu Maharaj's religious ceremonies are not very good. Prithu Maharaj, what he's doing appears to be very good. Performing sacrifice, king is supposed to do that. But Lord Vishnu is telling him it's not very good. Even though it appears to be very good and what his duty is to do. And religious and pious. So in the same way I'm thinking I'm sitting in front of extremely elevated and senior Vaishnav here and speaking on Srimad Bhagavatam, which might appear to be very good, but It becomes very difficult when devotees become so humble. It becomes very difficult to deal with them, isn't it? Anyway, I'll go on with my false egoistic performance. Yeah, this point is Srimad Bhagavatam from the very beginning. Dharma Projhita Kaitava Atra. From the very beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, the very first statement about Srimad Bhagavatam describing what is the nature of this Srimad Bhagavatam, it first of all describes what is rejected. Of course, before that, the subject has been described in the first verse of Bhagavatam, that the subject is Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But just in case anyone thinks, oh, okay, we've heard about Vasudeva before. In different Puranas, there's descriptions of Vasudeva. So here, there will also be some description. But there is a difference in Srimad Bhagavatam, that from the very beginning, it is strongly, clearly stated that herein all kinds of cheating religion are rejected. So what is that cheating religion? Well, if anyone has half a brain or even quarter of a brain, they can understand that Sai Baba is cheating. And so many others. There's so many bogus gurus and bogus avatars, which just goes to show that most people, they don't have even quarter of a brain. They don't have even any spiritual intelligence. Not even slightly. Because they're attracted to these cheaters and rascals. But here, dharma prajita kaitava atra, the rejection of dharma, cheating, kaitava dharma, that is explained by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and others before him, that here dharma means dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Or the proper and religious activities which are described all throughout the rest of the Vedic literature. So that's a shock, isn't it? You read all the Vedic literature and you think you're being very pious. And you come to Srimad Bhagavatam, and just like Narada told Vyasadeva, actually, jugupsitam, it's all very bad, everything that you have described. That's a real shock for Vyasadeva, isn't it? Because that's what he's supposed to do. That's what Vyasa means. He divides and classifies the Vedas for the benefit of human society. But here in this verse, in this series of verses, we find confirmation of this point and elaboration on it, or demonstration of it, that any religious activity which is executed in terms of the bodily conception of life, which here we get a clue, it's in regard to house, children, wealth and similar other bodily productions. It's not just the body, it's everything that goes along with the bodily conception. Ato griha kshetra sutapta vitaya janasya moho yamahammameti. This is the bodily conception. One doesn't just think in terms of I am this body, but also thinks in terms of this is my home, this is my family, this is my country, these are my children, this is my money. So, thinking like this, or acting on this platform, is confirmed by Lord Vishnu speaking to Prithu Maharaj, who, like Vyas, who had compiled the Vedic literature, which was exactly what he's supposed to do. So Prithu Maharaj, doing exactly what he's supposed to do, to perform sacrifices, is getting a rebuke from Lord Vishnu, who's giving the proper concept, proper understanding. Because sacrifices can be performed only for the pleasure of Vishnu, but generally they are performed with some personal motive in mind. as appeared to be the case with Prithu Maharaj. He had some motive to attain. It may have been, at least Indra thought like that, that Prithu Maharaj had some motive to attain the position of Indra and to become a Shatakratu, one who has performed 100 of such sacrifices that bring some fame and glory. Whether or not he had such a motive, Lord Vishnu is addressing him as if he did have such a motive, and he's rebuking him for that, which also shows the exalted position of Prithu Maharaj, because Lord Vishnu is instructing him like that. Lord Vishnu, he doesn't always instruct in pure devotional service. We find many cases in Shastra. In fact, all of Shastra is coming from, it's all Lord Vishnu's instruction. But much of it is not directly delineating pure devotional service. So Prithu Maharaj, he's very dear to Lord Vishnu. He's as the king, Naranam Chandaratipam. He's a representative of Lord Vishnu. But even more directly, he's a Shaktyavesh avatar, especially in this world for the sake of serving Lord Vishnu with a particular purpose, restoring the order and maintaining the order. Of course, all kings, they may be said to be imbued with that Palana Shakti, the empowered, if they're at all able to remain steady in their post and administer the kingdom, they're receiving Shakti, they're receiving ability and energy from the Supreme Lord. But Prithu Maharaj is specifically known as a Shaktyavesh avatar and a great devotee of Lord Vishnu. So for this reason he's being instructed or rebuked. One can, or those who are very close to Krishna, they can be rebuked by him. Those who are less close, they may be cheated by him. The Supreme Lord, he's also a cheater, but everything he does is for the benefit of everyone. But he may cheat people for their own benefit also. This Kaitava Dharma, Dharma, that cheating religion, that is Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. But that's given by the Supreme Lord because people want to be cheated. They're starting by cheating themselves of their own actual self-interest. Not being Krishna conscious, people come to this world because they self-deception. So even if Lord Vishnu is to tell them directly, you come out of this, come to me, they say, forget it, I'm not interested. So he gives a cheating process. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. With the aim of eventually bringing people to Krishna, of reforming their consciousness so that they're able to ultimately hear the message of Srimad Bhagavatam from pure devotees and understand that there's nothing to do, there's nothing of actual benefit but to surrender to Lord Vishnu. So one who's not so surrendered, he may not get an instruction like this as Prithu Maharaj is getting. He may get a cheating instruction. Daksha, we find, that's described in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam, how Daksha Maharaj, he was granted direct darshan of the Supreme Lord. And Daksha asked for the ability to produce many children, which was what he was also supposed to do. He's a Prajapati. He's supposed to do means, actually what everyone is supposed to do is to surrender to Krishna. But those who are not fully prepared to surrender to Krishna, they can do a little of the something for me, something for you, this kind of devotional service. Get a donation and 50% for me and 50% for Krishna, this kind of thing goes on. So Daksha was like that, so Lord Vishnu indulged him. Narad Muni, after diverting the Haryashvas and Shavalashvas, 11,000 sons of Daksha, he diverted them from the purpose that Daksha wanted them to engage in, namely to follow in Daksha's footsteps and have lots of children and be good pious householders. Narad Muni diverted them from that and sent them back to Godhead. And then Narad Muni thought, okay, let's try Daksha himself. Now maybe I can divert him back to Godhead also. Now that might be considered that's a disturbance in the universal order, because Daksha is meant for creating Prajapati. Creating Praja, for giving birth to many children. So if Narad Muni did that, if he'd actually been successful in diverting Daksha, then the universal order would have been disturbed. But actually the universe, it's only meant for, its real purpose is to reform the conditioned souls. So the real purpose is being served by sending people back to Godhead, even if it causes an apparent disturbance in the natural order. That already happened with the four Kumaras. They were also supposed to be Prajapatis. But when Lord Brahma ordered them to create children, he said no. So Lord Brahma was upset. His job was being disturbed by his own children, who they're supposed to show the example and obey him and do what he wants. But they didn't. They defied him, because they had a higher purpose in mind. So this often happens up to the present day. Similar kind of thing. A young man wants to take to devotional service fully, and the parents don't agree, and we have so many loans, we have to pay them, and you were betrothed when you were 6 years old to this girl, and what will she do, and what will anyone do? So it'll go on. We always have so many responsibilities, and so many people will be disturbed if anyone takes to full-time devotional service. So there is an arrangement whereby one can go through all the different ashrams and then eventually retire when the children are grown up and they can look after the elderly mother. Then the man can retire and take the full-time devotional service, which doesn't very often happen, even among our full-time devotees. Those who get older, they remain attached to their families till the last moment. That's the usual pattern I'm seeing. But even if they do want to go away, and vanam gato yadharim ashrayeta, to go to the forest, go to Vrindavan to take shelter of Hari, then everyone will object. And the wife will object, the children will object, the relatives will object, the other devotees will object, everyone will object. There's no reason to object. The purpose of life is to be Krishna conscious, and material attachment blocks Krishna consciousness. So therefore the Vedic system, as Srila Prabhupada often quoted, panchas ardvang vanang vrajet, after the age of 50 one should leave home. and go to the forest. It means to leave the forest of material enjoyment and go to Vrindavan, or to serve Krishna fully. So that is the purpose of life, and those who are initiated devotees especially, they should, or their life is, initiation means to dedicate one's life to Krishna. So one may have material responsibilities, and that is supposed, one is supposed to discharge them. So when they're discharged, then there's nothing else to do but to serve Krishna. But we often find that even though there's all opportunity to do so, mostly people, they remain attached. So Lord Vishnu or his representatives, they speak to persons who are willing to hear. The clear understanding, because it is very easy not to have the clear understanding. What is not correct appears to be correct. That is called Maya. Asatyare shakta karimani ahankare natta hoya nitai pada pasharya asatyare shakta karimani. Due to false egoism, we become mad and we forget the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, and therefore we take that which is unreal to be real. So this bodily conception of life, and that may be there. You see, Prithu Maharaj, he was performing sacrifices, he's supposed to be intelligent and learned, but Lord Vishnu is rebuking him, that you appear to be still affected by the bodily conception of life. So that may be there in our devotional service also. You may think, now I've become a very great devotee, now I'm a sannyasi, or now I'm a GBC or temple president or senior devotee, or people come and put flower garlands on me. The bodily conception of life may influence us, even if we are apparently advanced in devotional service. So this message Lord Vishnu is giving to Prithu Maharaj, of course we understand that Prithu Maharaj actually is a very advanced devotee, but sometimes the Supreme Lord, he instructs like that, he instructs in such a way for the benefit of others. He instructs through those who don't really need to be instructed, just like Arjuna. For Arjuna to be instructed in the ultimate truth, he had to get into Maya. He was covered by the illusory potency of the Lord. He became an illusion. Then he could be instructed. But for us, we don't have to be covered by the illusory potency of the Lord because we're already covered. So Arjuna is only temporarily put in that situation, or there's some show of him being put in that situation, so that we can be instructed. Srila Prabhupada gave the example of how the mother-in-law instructs by instructing her own daughter. Because in the traditional Indian family, which is almost completely finished now, the young girl, she's married, and she goes to the husband's house, which means they live with the parents, although in modern Indian family, the girls, that's one condition for them to get married, that they won't live with the parents. Although they call the parents, when they have the child, then they call the parents to look after the baby so that she can go off to work, to have enough money for her lipstick and all this kind of thing. So So the young girl is there, 13 years old, whatever, and she's new in the house, and she doesn't know the house rules and how things are done in the new house. So her mother-in-law may instruct the daughter-in-law, not directly, but her own daughter, that means the daughter-in-law's sister-in-law, the mother of the sister-in-law, namely the mother-in-law, any little mistake by the daughter, she will chastise. You did this. No, don't do it like that. Do it like that. I told you so many times. But actually the daughter already knows, because she's a member of that family, but to instruct the other, the new girl, who doesn't know, it's done indirectly, like that. So in the same way, Lord Vishnu, Krishna, he instructs Arjuna. And through Arjuna, he instructs the world. We shouldn't think that Arjuna is actually in Maya or any such thing. So here also, Lord Vishnu instructs Prithu Maharaj. That may be also, we see sometimes Srila Prabhupada, he said some very heavy things to some of his closest disciples. And sometimes devotees, they quote this. You see, Prabhupada said this about him, that proves, you see. Prabhupada said he's a rascal. He told him directly to his face, you're a rascal. So that proves he's a rascal. You see, Prabhupada said. But most of the devotees, if Prabhupada said that, they'd just say, okay, forget it. I don't need to be called a rascal. I'm going back to my girlfriend. I don't need all this. So the devotees who can take that instruction, who were surrendered enough, they may be instructed in that way. But we can understand, the instruction may be meant also, but through a close associate, others are instructed. So we shouldn't think, though, that one who is being rebuked by his guru, we should think, oh, he's very fortunate. I'm not so fortunate. Just like we see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would never say anything to Advaita Acharya, always offered him all the greatest respect. Advaita Acharya didn't like that. That means, oh, he doesn't actually consider me very close. So Advaita Acharya thought, now I have to do something, I have to be chastised by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so I have to think of something he doesn't like. So then Advaita, what did he think of doing? He spoke Mayavad. And then all the rascal scholars, they will see Advaita, he was a Mayavadi, smarta brahmana. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was very strict in observing the Vaishnava etiquette, what is that? Maryada longan ami shahitena pari, something like that. I cannot tolerate transgression of Vaishnava etiquette. But when he got this news, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he set out from Navadvip and went all the way to Shantipal by walking, specifically for the purpose of beating Advaita Acharya very severely. Now you think by the time he got from Navadvip to Shantipur, he might have cooled down a bit, but no, he beat him very severely. So we can understand from this that Advaita was very happy. Okay, very good. Now I know Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has accepted me. So from this we can understand that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't like Mayavad. Doesn't like it at all. That's one thing. We can also understand that because a disciple appears to be mistreated, it might seem from the external point of view, he's been mistreated. But that's actually a sign that he's being accepted. Prabhupada said that it's the duty of the guru to chastise the disciple, even if there's nothing wrong with the disciple. Even if he doesn't do anything wrong, the guru should still get on his case. Now that doesn't seem very fair, does it? Who will want to be a disciple? But that's the mercy coming down. So here, Lord Vishnu is rebuking Prithu Maharaj. You see, you're supposed to be learned, but you appear to be attached in the bodily conception of life. What is this? So that lesson is for us. We should not be attached. All right, I'll finish there. Any question, please? Yes, please. Janmashtami.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for a wonderful class.
Wonderful. We're all struck with wonder. Srimad Bhagavatam is wonderful. Every prati shloke prati akkare nana arthakoi. Krishna Tula Bhagavat. What is that? Krishna Vibhu Sarvashroy. Srimad Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna. Just like Krishna is all powerful, can give all shelter to everyone. And every verse and every syllable can be explained in so many different ways. You see, there are so many devotees here who can give class. And everyone, you sit them down and they may give a completely different class on the same verse. And all Krishna conscious. Because Krishna reveals himself in various ways to various devotees. So, thank you.
Your points about renunciation were very powerful. And I'm wondering, the facility appears to be more difficult to achieve because of the lack of extended family. And, I know senior devotees that are quite advanced in Krishna consciousness, at least.
Can everyone hear?
I'm speaking loud. Oh, okay. Mm. So, first I said that I very much appreciate your points about renouncing family life at the proper time, proper stage of life. And then I kind of want to preface my inquiry by an observation, and you also made this point, that because of the lack of extended family in modern times, it's a little more difficult to achieve renunciation, or to actually take that route, because in olden times, the wife would be taken care of by the children or the extended family. That was a given. And now with an ISKCON, if a man wants to renounce, he has to get permission from his wife, and there's a much more complex arrangement that seems to be in place. And I know senior devotees that they don't feel, this woman has served faithfully for so many years, and I just don't have the heart to cut her loose, let her live in a situation where she's not protected. And they have an impression that it would be displeasing to Krishna to do that. Now, on the other hand, the points about severing these material association, the material association, material responsibilities, are just vital to achieving, to going into higher stages of Krishna consciousness in preparation for the final test. That's absolutely vital. So it's a bit of a quandary that older bodied devotees are facing, and I'm wondering. Prabhupada made many time, place, and circumstance adjustments. And I'm just wondering, how to sort through, these issues. It's a pretty big how-to question, but yet it's something that's in the forefront of my mind.
Okay, a very good point. Traditionally, there's the extended family. So if a man leaves his wife, she's looked after. That's the system. The wife is looked after by the eldest son. That's the duty, the old wife. But in the modern society, we don't have extended family, or practically any family, for that matter. And often the children, they may not even be devotees, they're not prepared to look after their older mother. That's also a consideration. So a devotee might think, well, I'm older and I should renounce, but how can I abandon this woman who served me faithfully throughout my life? She's also a devotee. That's a good point. My point, there here, is that, yeah, there may be validity to that point, but what happens is that no one, with no one taking, or very few taking that step of renouncing a, well, first of all, there's very few who have wives who stay with them throughout their lives anyway, at least among Prabhupada disciples. And of those who do, there are very few who renounce their wives for the sake of, you know, when their children are grown up, and then they go on. Not only Prabhupada disciples, also others, older generation. But what, so there may be validity to what you express, that there's no proper facilities, so why should I abandon this woman? But then what happens is the whole syndrome becomes one of, no one even thinks of renunciation, and we accept it as the normal situation where everyone just lives with their wife until the last moment of this body. But the result of that is that one is likely to, or if due to some material attachment, there may be, it may not just be pure, one may say, oh, my wife's a pure devotee, so it's pure devotee association, but one may be attached in a material way, even to a pure devotee. This Kunti Devi prays, Sneha Pashami Mang Chindi, what is it, Yadu Su, what is this, Sneha Pashami Mang Chindi, anyway, she said, Jira Pandashu Vishnishu, my strong attachment of affection. Even the Yadus and the Vrishnis are all pure devotees, but she was feeling as if I have some mundane, my attachment to them is in a mundane way. So it is possible to be attached to pure devotees in a mundane way also. That's also possible. So the result of that will be one will get born again in this material world. And the whole purpose is to go to Krishna and to think of Krishna purely at the time of death. So that is there, system is there in Vedic culture that one should become renounced. It doesn't necessarily mean that one has to become fully take sannyas, but at least vanaprastha life should be there, in which one, if one lives with one's wife, preferably in a holy place or fully engaged in devotional service, no sense gratification, and not in, otherwise the family matters will go on forever. What happens is one finishes with one's own children, the responsibility, they get married, then the grandchildren come and then you're caught again, and that's even more affection for the grandchildren. So then you get caught again, and then you're trapped. So it may be that one lives with one's wife, but in a renounced manner, and not cultivating family attachment. Now, there should be facility actually for elderly women in Mayapur and Vrindavan. It's one of the many things which our society is still to get together properly. But then there's the idea you have to arrange all this facility, that facility, becomes a very expensive thing. But it should be actually it shouldn't be a major financial burden, because if people are supposed to live simply, then they don't need luxury. Anyway, my point is that the details of it, and in individual cases it can be considered, that unless that spirit of renunciation is cultivated, then it'll be lost. And if the elders don't do that, then the juniors also won't do. And then there's no vairagya, there's no vidya, and then there's no bhakti yoga. So that's required. Vairagya vidya nija bhakti yogam shikshatameka purusha purana. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dhari Kripambhute Yastamaham Prapadya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is an ocean of mercy. His mercy manifests not by giving us sense gratification, but by giving us vairagya vidya as the conjuncts of bhakti yoga. So that has to be there. It may seem very strange sitting in this palatial building talking about vairagya, but this building is only meant for vairagya in bhakti. Only those should live here who have a vairagya. If you don't have vairagya, don't come here, otherwise you'll be spoiled. If we think, oh, now I can enjoy, then finished. Therefore, everyone should be fully engaged, very busily. That's vairagya, to be fully engaged in the mission of Krishna. If one is not fully engaged, that means he's enjoying the facility. Yeah. Come here, you may have to give the mic.
Maharaj, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Instead of 50% for me and 50% for Krishna, if a devotee thinks only 1% for me, 99% for Krishna, do you think he is progressing in Krishna consciousness?
Instead of thinking 50% for me, 50% for Krishna, if one thinks only 1% for me and 99% for Krishna, is he progressing in Krishna consciousness? Well, he progressed from 50 to 99 for Krishna, so that is a progression. And if you get as far as 99, then the other one should get washed away by the power of bhakti. But it's true, if we have even a slight desire for personal enjoyment, then we're not there. But that's why we have the process of sadhana bhakti, because we're not pure. We're talking about the ideal standard to understand that that's what we're aiming at. But we have the process of sadhana bhakti because it's understood that we are on the way. But from the beginning it should be anyadhilashita shunyam. We should not be... If from the beginning we cultivate material desire, it will be very difficult to throw it out along the way. From the beginning, if we understand, I'm only meant for Krishna's service, then we can progress very nicely. But if from the beginning we think that, all right, let me see, I like chanting Hare Krishna, but let me see what I can get here also, for me, then it's going to be very difficult to progress. Anything else? Yeah, please give the mic to Asim Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Prithu Maharaj is an empowered incarnation,
yeah.
And one sense he is a pure devotee,
yeah.
But still he is motivated to achieve the post of Indra. And
he is a pure devotee, Prithu Maharaj. So the question is, how is he motivated to attain the position of Indra? Maybe not, he's not in... He wanted to perform 100 sacrifices. It's not described that he wanted to kick Indra out. That was Indra's fear. Right? It's not that he was thinking that I will become Indra, but he was gaining the qualification for doing that. He wanted to perform, we can understand he wanted to perform the sacrifice for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu. Pure devotee does everything. Krishna te akhila cheshta, everything for the pleasure of Krishna. But it appeared to Indra, and it might have appeared to others also, that he was materially motivated. So we should be careful. Devotee might appear to be materially motivated. The same thing that a pure devotee might do something that a motivated devotee also does. And one may think that the pure devotee is materially motivated. You see, Srila Prabhupada built this beautiful temple and so many other temples. And someone may, but Rupa Goswami has warned against building. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he forbade, you don't have all these big buildings. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati made so many. So people will criticize, you see, your guru said don't do and you're doing. But then one has to understand the purpose. If someone does for their own prestige and comfort, then they're disobeying. But if by building a big building you bring so many people to serve and follow the message of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then that is desired. If that's what's required to execute his mission. So often the ways of pure devotees, they're very difficult to understand, actually. And that also doesn't mean that everyone who does something which appears to be motivated is pure. It may be motivated also. So it requires fine discrimination to understand. Yeah, one more question then. Oh, Jamashri.
Along the same lines that I was inquiring about before, Maharaj, it strikes me that it would be a big increase for our movement if grihasthas who have successfully passed through the ashram to move into renunciation to make excellent sannyasis. That's the whole idea. They'll be fully renounced. You know, our sannyas ashram in many ways has been unstable because of a lack of people in that category. To some extent, that may be part of the reason. You know, the reason. I mean, Prabhupada jump-started the movement by...
That's a good term. That describes it very well.
And it seems like it could really catapult, you know, if this actually becomes a common phenomena within ISKCON, it could catapult our movement to a new level of productivity. I know, like,
many householders are just sitting at home watching TV and they have nothing really to do. They may not be watching TV, they may be quietly doing their own bhakti. They could be doing so much more, retired, living peacefully and comfortably, but there's so much work to do all over the world. They could be doing so much more. Then they think, I'm not qualified, I'm just ordinary. We're all ordinary. Who are we? Who am I? You know, within our little ISKCON movement, I'm a little big shot. I'm not a big shot, but I'm a little big shot. Just like anyone else, there's just some kid who fell in the door someday and, you know, they shaved my head, stuck some tilak and started chanting a few rai. I'm just everyone. I mean, no, you know, I'm not like I came down from the spiritual world on a chariot. No such thing. Right. So, everyone, jare deko tare koho Krishna upadesh. You know, in philosophy, then take it out. Well, you can set the example. If I say this, who will listen? Just another of those fanatic sannyasis.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, could you please explain how to build determination?
Build determination. Well, interestingly, I just read something yesterday in which Prabhupada said, if you don't have determination, then you are an animal. If you don't have determination to follow the vows, then you are an animal. So, it's not a good question to ask. The point is that once you take to Krishna consciousness, you should take to it. Now, not determined means one hasn't heard properly. One hasn't. It's not chitete koriya oikya. That means an animal cannot hear properly. So human can atato brahma jignyasa, he can inquire and then understand. And if we understand, then we must be determined. If we're not, determined means we never heard properly. And if you say, how can we develop determination, it means that unless you answer me properly, I've got a good excuse to go on with my sense gratification. Rascaldom. Just see what a nasty reply I gave. I was just hearing one devotee wrote to Prabhupada. He was saying, I am this very sinful person, and I just want to learn about Krishna, and I need your mercy. And Prabhupada wrote him back a letter, just a very short letter, saying that you're on the mental platform, you don't know what you want, and you should just follow your authorities. And that devotee left, which proved Prabhupada's point, that he appeared to be very sincere, but Prabhupada didn't accept that. The devotee appeared to be very sincere, but Prabhupada didn't accept his so-called sincerity, and then he just left, that devotee, which just proved the point that he wasn't very sincere. Hare Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Hare Krishna. Is that going to work without the mic in it? I think you have to reprogram. Oh, I see, okay.